immediate area right now. But it's and the wind has shifted again. So the temperatures will start to warm up now. Wind south at 10, gusty to 24 miles per hour. We fell into the 60s after starting at 81 degrees. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and I do appreciate the fact that our good friend Dr. Art Sear, a monthly visitor to the morning show for more than two decades, has made his way through the worst that Mother Nature can throw at us this morning, has made his way to WGTD studios from his home in northern Illinois, where I think Ocean News and Racine Journal Times, and he is also the author of the book After the Cold War, and we're going to be talking about three of his most recent columns, which touch on three really interesting topics. And Professor Sear, we welcome you back to the morning show. Thank you again for making the trip.
Well, thank you, as always, for your kind words while I catch my breath here.
Right. Well, I hope it wasn't. I hope you weren't putting yourself in harm's way too much as you drove through those powerful thunderstorms. So, and we're trying to keep an eye on the weather situation even as we talk about other matters, and we will certainly jump in as necessary if there are updates that we need to give.
I had to get through for NPR, partner.
We appreciate it. So we're going to talk, first of all, about a column that you wrote about recent elections in Europe. And and as usual, what you are trying to do is, in a sense, dissuade us from gravitating to just the headlines. And in so many cases, and I think you say this very rightly, the mass media that seem to indicate a surging popularity of far-right political parties, when in fact you tell us kind of the overall picture is not just that. First of all, tell us about the elections that took
an important component. They have roughly an executive, legislative, and judicial branch of the now European Union, these institutions for European integration that began soon after World War II. Deutschland, the AfD, the alternative for Germany, a far-right party, did extremely well, and other far-right parties, notably in the Netherlands and elsewhere, have done well, including in France, where the president, President Macron, has called national elections.
At 20 members. In general, what does it do? What are its responsibilities? Can you clarify that for us at all?
I'm not an expert in detail, but they basically pass legislation. They provide a broad, comprehensive overview of what the European Union should be doing. I don't believe they have any, in contrast to, say, the American Congress or the British Parliament, what we're familiar with, they don't have direct taxing authority. The ability to, the income that the very large, and I'm all for big bureaucracy in this case, the very substantial bureaucracy of the European Commission and the other institutions are supported by member government contributions. In 1965, the European Economic Community, then the EEC, predecessor of the current EU, tried to, a very daring move by Walter Hallstein and the other integrationists of that time, they tried to press through a motion to directly collect income from the member states. And Charles de Gaulle, the great nationalist president of France, phenomenal hero of World War II, and thereafter, de Gaulle almost wrecked the Europe. So I hope that's clear. I'm not an expert on the subject. I'll be glad to communicate directly with any of our, because it's important, any of our listeners who wants to know more. I'll be glad to do some homework.
Right.
I hope that's clear, but it is an important debating body, and debating is important.
Right.
Winston Churchill liked to say, the great warrior, to jaw is better than war. But, you know, as long as you're talking, you're less likely to be fighting.
That's not a bad philosophy.
It's really important in the context of Europe.
Sure. You write at one point, the major point of European Union institutions, and I think you're saying the Parliament is one of them, the major point of European Union institutions is to restrain extremist movements and potentially extremist nations in a web of economic, political, and legal agreements that provide increasingly powerful incentives to compromise and cooperate.
Well, thank you for quoting me. I'm always glad to hear what I've written. It helps refresh my aging memory.
Right.
It's an
elegant turn of phrase, too. What was interesting, too, as I read that, is it also maybe helped me understand why, for instance, Britain, whether wisely or foolishly can be debated, but elected to remove itself from the European Union. Is maybe because of, they did not want to be part of a web of economic and political agreements that, and so on. I mean, like, if there are at least certain people in Britain that found that to be, in a sense, restrictive and so on. But I think you really are making a powerful point.
And the early initial political economists and later, and the Liberal Party in Britain in the 1800s, that free trade is, and the Liberal Democrats today, their successors, that free trade can be benign, and it's a good way to make war less likely. Now, unfortunately, that argument lost some credibility in that bath. So it doesn't always work, but I find it a very persuasive argument. And that was at the heart of the European integration movement, which began even before Pearl Harbor. With strong assistance from the United States, including influential Europeans who've taken refuge here.
This particular column goes on to focus in particular on Germany, which at one point you say in the column is by far the largest and strongest economy on the European continent. And I guess to some extent I knew that was true, but I guess I'm not sure I was aware that that they were a front runner to a really have led Germany through some of these times that have been quite challenging. And their leadership has involved more than a little bit of juggling. I think you actually utilized that verb when in talking about them. Describe kind of the complexity of the challenges.
About immigration, which continues, but it seemed more intense during her long tenure. And also bailing out what many Germans would see as deadbeat welfare receiving nations, Greece especially, not too long ago, also Spain, Portugal, Italy, traditional sick person of Europe economically and politically. Mm-hmm. A lot of Germans resented the fact that we're providing aid to these countries through the EU. And she skillfully maintained humanitarian assistance through immigration and also financially, and also maintained the discipline to not only bail out Greece and others, but also impose pretty strict loan conditions. These weren't just grants and aid, contrary to what the far right will argue. And Greece, and it's worked, been resolved. And Greece is, the economy is doing very strong, very well. So as long as you can keep liquidity, as any smart business person will tell you.
Of the European Union.
Yeah.
And you know, so it, like on the one hand, just these domestic issues are complicated and challenging enough. And then at the same time, personalities, I mean, it's not just this big group of countries that just easily and naturally get along with each other. But I mean, in many cases, they're set up in very different ways, have cultures that are quite distinct, and building these meaningful ties, I mean, it takes work and it takes skill.
When they declared war on us, quite confident that the soft bourgeois, sloppy Americans would be. And we were losing on both fronts for a while. It was a scary war that we could have lost.
Right.
But we won, and there are important reasons why democracies, if you can hold out, why democracies will win.
Right.
It's kind of like cash flow in business, but a lot tougher. If you can hold out and be smart, there's tremendous resources in democracies, not just our phenomenal economic resources.
So for as much as, you know, you want to heighten our attention to the fact that middle-of-the-road parties actually did the best in these recent elections, I don't remember who it is in the column, but you quote somebody as saying that we do need to be vigilant when it comes to some of the surging interest in these far-right political parties. And in other words, just because we shy away from the alarmist headlines does not mean we can be complacent, or that Europe should be complacent about this.
Well, she should be quoted by name, because she, I emphasize in this particular place, President Ursula von der Leyen from the Low Countries of the European Commission, the chief executive of the European Union. She described the election results as a victory for moderate politics. The centrist European People's Party, the EPP, which won 119 seats, the most for any one group, can serve, in her words, as, quote, an anchor of stability, unquote. She also called for vigilance against extremism. And she is readily available on YouTube and elsewhere, and is not only an influential figure, now stepping down, I think, but she's she provides a good moving history of the major events of her tenure in recent years. So it's a notable figure, just like de Gaulle in an earlier time, a less integrated time. No, she has really been important from my point of view.
Very good. What was the name again?
Ursula von der Leyen.
Right.
Very yes. Good. There in my column, which you've been kind enough to read.
But also, I neglected to write her name down. So anyway, I'll try to remember that.
The Alternative for Germany got 16% of the vote. And I believe they took all the provinces of the former East Germany, where the state still controls the military and the basis of taxation and customs duties. The big crisis in the mid-60s was when the commission tried to grab customs duties directly, the taxes you collect at the borders, which used to be how nation states mostly financed themselves historically and traditionally, and are still important, although it's a tax we don't pay much attention to, party to another. And his current party did extremely well in the European elections. Extreme parties generally do, and that's important to keep in mind with the alternative for Germany. Maximilian Krah, K-R-A-H, the leader of the alternative for Germany in the European Union, he was removed at the insistence of the Parliament and Ursula von der Leyen, because he was given to saying things like, well, the SS, they were not all criminals. Which is probably literally true, but it's not something you want to say politically. And immediately he was removed as head of their faction. And it shows how sensitive not us, but the Europeans are to the dangers of nationalism, especially there.
Right.
Especially there.
Yeah. For those of you just joining us, we are joined today in our studios by Dr. Art Sear, a monthly visitor to The Morning Show. And we are exploring some of the interesting themes and topics that he has touched on in three of his most recent columns. I learned so much from your column concerning the nation of Australia, and and learned a whole lot about the nature of and the long history of ours, particularly in what you call the tense context of our relationship right now with China. You open the column by talking about kind of a dramatic move that has just taken place with a factory that has just opened on the outskirts of Sydney. It was an interesting way to broach the topic. It involves apparently the very first factory outside of our borders to be building a very effective weapon, and there it is
was overdone, I think. There's been a lot of criticism because that's what the media and others do. But in terms of policy, not actual military resources, but in terms of policy, we have been shifting attention toward Asia because of the threat of China. Not only military, but a very aggressive India, Australia, Japan and the United States. Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, an initiative of the George H.W. Bush administration, has become an extremely important regional forum, in some ways comparable to NATO and other Atlantic area organizations. So Australia is becoming more and more important in that wider context strategically. It's a specific, it's a factory to build a, I believe, a specific kind of drone, revolutionary change. The other is being able to actually hit the target. There's been a military revolution, starting with, visible during Vietnam, but since then, such that it's helped both defensive and offensive forces, depending on how many of these you have. But basically, I believe it strengthens the defense, and has been opening Russian tanks, other vehicles, personnel, using precision-guided munitions. This is extraordinarily important. I know that, even though I'm not a technical expert, and moving it to Australia shows how close we are. It dates from World War II. Japan had very good hopes of invading Australia after their shattering victory in not only Pearl Harbor, but a humiliating defeat of the British in Singapore, a fortress that the British thought was impregnable, like impregnable fortresses throughout history, the Japanese. So things were really tough. We were able to hold Australia through very brutal and bitter fighting in Guadalcanal and elsewhere, New Guinea, Bougainville. My first boss was a veteran of Bougainville, so I learned about it firsthand. Young lieutenant, really brutal kind of warfare that was criminal by our standards. The Australians, more like the British, were just very good at killing the enemy without creating a lot of ancillary damage. Now, they're just phenomenal warriors. It started out as a British colony and a British prison colony, as you may know, now a strong, well-established democracy. I met Australians. I'd love to go there. I've never been there, but I did meet some overall a good deal more like us, and they really like us. We tend to ignore Australia. They've also liked, as often the case with presidents.
Of what, again, what you call this tense context, and that refers to how the tension that exists between the United States and China, and of course, between China and other allies of ours in that area. So what is the role that Australia plays in that?
They're an increasingly important military base. President Obama, another important presidential visit, less vexed than President Johnson's visit. President Obama visited Australia as part of an agreement to base B-52 bombers in Australia. We now have about a half a dozen that are based in Australia, these extraordinary transcontinental bombers that are all-purpose weapons that have been active since the 1950s. Just one of these, like precision-guided munitions, one of these phenomenal weapons stories with very different roles than thermonuclear war, which is why they were built. And there's a rather large contingent of U.S. Marines now in Australia. So if there were a war with China, God forbid, and I don't believe we will have a war with China, nonetheless, Australia is a very important forward base, as it was during World War II and during the Vietnam War.
Interesting.
It's because they're such a reliable ally, people like the British. Academic types are professionals who tend to be liberal, but working people, all kinds of people. But having said that, not for truly legal, judicial reasons. Whatever you might think about that, and a lot of people would disagree with that, in terms of public support generally, it doesn't seem to have impacted his standing in the polls. And I'm sure it's motivated his base to turn out more strongly than would otherwise be the case. But one thing that's impressed me, except in the court of public opinion and in the media, before the recent convictions, despite a very controversial career, real estate business in New York, if you're at all involved in the real estate business, especially in the post-war period and into very recent times, you would be dealing with mafia elements. And Trump had a very strong reputation for avoiding anything that might be at all questionable. Atlantic City in the 1970s legalized gambling, and Ovid only in Atlantic City, and chaos ensued. New Jersey's, like New York, has always been a rather strong location for organized crime in urban areas. There's a very successful Netflix, I think it was a Netflix series called Boardwalk Empire.
Right.
Even I saw a few episodes based loosely on the career of Nucky Johnson, a pre-World War II crime boss who jungle, which is only related in terms of subject matter to the Netflix series. He dealt with gambling in New Jersey from the 70s onward, and there's a rather long section on Donald Trump. I refreshed my memory after Trump became a national political figure. There's a pretty substantial section on the young Donald Trump, who was from a very wealthy New York family. His father, Fred, built a huge family fortune based on real estate. When gambling was opened up in Atlantic City, all kinds of younger mafioso for many years in Atlantic City, when he thought he was in safe territory, a shotgun blast removed Mr. Bruno from the scene, and it really became a wild environment. But by the 1970s, prison for fairly long terms, and other public officials, local, state, real estate developers, business people of all sorts, gangsters, went to prison. Abscam was huge. And there's a film, another film called American Hustle, which is actually, I think, a pretty good film. And for a Hollywood movie, it reasonably follows this dramatic episode in our history. one point, and Donald Trump was there. He was sounding off. He was here, there, everywhere, actions that could be prosecuted. And that characterized his career, a very unsuccessful business career until he became a media star, successfully. That characterized his career. He was famous for, if anybody showed up from the mob, including any woman affiliated with the mafia, showed up at a Manhattan party, Trump would leave the scene. Very ruthless TV interviewers who tried to entrap him early on, and he would quite literally say, you can see it on YouTube, I want to thank you very much for inviting me. Actually, I've got to go. I can't stay. And he would leave. So don't underestimate this. You don't want to underestimate opponents. And in his case, it's very easy. Conflict between J. Edgar Hoover and Attorney General Robert Kennedy. It's just fascinating history.
In your column, you set something out that helped me understand something I remember you saying a couple of months ago, which is about these, at least, you know, many of these charges being brought against former President Trump being very, very politically motivated. You do mention the fact that the Manhattan DA, Alvin Bragg, and the U.S. State Attorney General, Letitia Jones, when they campaigned for office, they actually, you tell us, they were pretty clear in terms of their intentions if elected. And so in a sense, they were spelling out sort of brazenly their intentions.
Yeah, that's right. And that's obviously wrong. But that's politics. That happens. I'm not going to be shocked in a Casablanca sense, but it's particularly obvious in Trump's case.
Right.
And it helps him with Americans who support him.
With his bloc.
Look at a map. Yeah. We live in a red country, meaning a Republican country, between the coasts.
Right. So are you planning to watch the debates the night after next? I believe Thursday night is the first debate between President Trump and current President Biden.
Yeah, I'm obliged to. Part of my, somebody's got to do it, and I hope to write a column at least at some point. I do urge everyone to watch earlier debates. Just about everything's available PCs as we age. Quite invigorating, but they're so audiovisual. I could even, by showing old films, I commend to everyone Executive Suite, 1955 classic, and also at least the first Kennedy-Nixon debate, which is phenomenal and gripping. They don't insult at length about serious policy issues.
Articulately.
They don't hug each other. They don't blow kisses. They don't shout and scream or act like five-year-olds. It's a good education for all of us. So watch earlier debates as well as this one, and we can thank Nixon especially, but JFK for taking the initiative to ask for debates. Nixon and Johnson took a pass, understandably, but we can thank Gerald Ford for agreeing to debate Jimmy Carter in 76. And since then, you got to do it.
Yeah.
You got to do it.
Yeah, it just has to happen.
Better or worse, richer or poorer, you got to do it.
Well, we'll be watching for your colleague. I do appreciate you making the effort to join us in person for yet another interesting Morning Show conversation. Dr. Art Sear joining us today for the Morning Show. Thank you so much, and we look forward to seeing you very soon.
A pleasure, and a tonic, like meeting with a class of young people, a real pleasure.
Tomorrow on the morning show, David Lapp will be joining us. He is one of the co-founders of a very interesting national organization known as Braver Angels. This is a group that seeks to facilitate more meaning. We should have sunshine by tomorrow and more comfortable conditions with tomorrow's high 83 degrees. Sunny on Thursday with a high of just 72 degrees. Looks like there's a pretty decent chance for rain redeveloping on Friday, but right now it looks like it will be a mostly sunny and very comfortable weekend. This is WGTDHD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, NPR News and